You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Boy, howdy, it's another episode of the Toil to Hell Radio Show. I'm Joe Thrash and Kill, as you know. And I'm joined by my good friends, 365 Days of Horror, also known as Jordan. Say hi.
Hello.
And Breno side.
Oh, hey, you didn't tell me to say hi. I'm my own master here.
No gods, no masters. Sweet. Just podcasts. All right, I don't want to delay a second here. Because I watched fucking 12 episodes of a 15-year-old MTV reality program.
See, hold on. You're starting off, you're already telling a lie.
Am I?
Because you are, because at least one of the episodes wasn't on YouTube.
No, Well, I got through what YouTube told me was 11 episodes then. Yeah. How many total were there?
There's 11 episodes, okay. But the 10th episode we just couldn't find. I think, maybe, I'm speculating, because Bill Ward was on it. Perhaps okay. That is the reason.
Okay. Yeah. Now I remember they introduced him, and I never saw what happened next. Also, they got rid of that guy that everybody hated. Okay, let's start over, though. What is this shit that you made me watch?
This shit. Jeez, that's the venom coming out of your voice.
It was a good show.
So this was the Battle for Ozfest. It's a 2004 reality TV show competition that's kind of came out around the same time as Paris Hilton's show and Survivor, where like reality TV was the big new thing that everyone was excited about. And this was gathering different members from a whole bunch of unsigned bands sort of across the country. It seemed to be like two California bands, two New York bands, I think one from Massachusetts, one from North Carolina, one from Dallas, Texas, and maybe like one more out there. And in true stupid television fashion, they had to do not quite competitions, but like different things along the way. They all hop on a tour bus, have to do things, different episodes, cleaning up.
Just like scripted hijinks,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen a reality television program, you've seen all the shit that's on display here. It's just reskinned and, a doddering Aussie occasionally comes into frame.
Yeah, this was the same time where The Osbournes was a television show.
Yeah.
Where, like, Ozzy was this fun little drugged out dad that everyone loved.
Every episode ends with the cap for Sharon Osbourne's production company. So this seems like this is another thing she was just really into. And, you know, she's on screen much more than Ozzy is. I think he's just like, ah, fuck, I guess I have to do this thing.
More or less, yeah. That's their entire relationship, though, a professional and romantic.
Well, I don't think they have a relationship anymore. I think.
Did they get divorced?
They didn't get divorced. They kind of hit the rocks a year or two ago, I think, for accusations of Ozzy cheating, and then they kind of got back together, and it's just been quiet since then.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah, I heard Ozzy was fucking around, and that was the final straw after what is 40 years of fucking around.
They're not going to get divorced. I mean, it would have to be something so horrible and egregious. I mean, they're each other's cash cows.
Yeah, too
they work together as a team.
Too lucrative of a deal.
Yeah.
One another. You can. It's like she won't break up with you after, damn near choking her to death. But the moment you bang a groupie or two, it's all over.
Well, she apparently did sleep with Randy Rhoads like 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so handsome.
Right. But, great looking dude.
That's kind of funny for me to think about, because wasn't he like 5'2"?
Just walk crawling all over her.
riding on her shoulders like the Aussie poster.
But in reverse.
That's awesome. Okay, so with this show, I don't know exactly how they determined who the contestants would be. I suppose people submitted, they recorded on their camcorders audition tapes or something and sent them in, and they found the most camera ready, or at least the people that seemed like the biggest shit shows that they could get.
Right, like the greatest douchebag factor was what they were going for, I'm assuming. Yeah.
But we did see other bands. The very first episode is kind of the whole tryout process, and they show some ridiculous looking bands, even by like 2003 metal band standards.
This whole thing made me realize just how fucking devoid of any kind of culture we were in 2003 to 2004. Like, metal was possibly it's the lowest point ever. New metal was essentially over. Metalcore was maybe coming around, kind of, but not super really. And then there was just bands that sounded exactly like the gray sludge that comes out of a speaker when you put a Godsmack CD on.
Yeah. This really was like a time capsule of the end of nu metal and the beginning of metalcore. And you even kind of see that with the bands that they have on the show and the bands that were on Ozfest at the time.
This was definitely like the heart with bat wings tattoo era of heavy metal music.
Christ. And it's kind of interesting to see the contestants, because my second favorite contestant is a metalcore dude, and he's very much a metalcore dude, and that he like wears his baseball cap cocked off to a stupid angle, and calls his girlfriend a stupid bitch on the phone, and all of these tropes that we've come to know and love from that scene. Whereas other guys, you've just got like dudes that are wearing carpenter fit jeans and black tank tops that don't fit while they do their best Tool impression.
So I'm watching this show, and this was recorded in 2004, mind you. We're talking literally 15 years ago and then some. And what hit me the most is, like, I go to concerts and all of you fucking morons still look like this. You still wear, like, it's all black baggy t-shirts and like cargo pants and fucking hats off to the side and maybe like goatees. It's just it's terrible.
You never run out of a classic look.
Yeah, I guess so.
We can run through the participants. We have Jesse, who was in Trauma Concept.
I don't remember that like one. Which one is that?
The bald fat one.
Yeah.
That guy was probably his band, I think, in their little audition tape sounded like the most quote unquote metal band to me. Like they were a little bit harder than the other ones.
Yeah. Well, he did like kind of heavier, lower, almost death vocals. Mm-hmm. And we had Kelly, who was in Six Deep.
Was that Six Deep? Oh, Kelly the man, the guy with the line beard.
And the Liberty Spikes and the clear contacts.
This was my favorite character and my favorite band of this entire thing by far. But we'll get back into that guy later.
Rapcore is what they were from New York. And they're very much like... I grew up in New Jersey and I never saw them, but there were so many bands like them at the time. Like, I could just rattle off four or five bands and maybe one person listening be like, oh yeah, I remember them. But it was kind of like really bad Biohazard.
If anybody remembers the very short-lived UPN sitcom Shasta McNasty, that is the band from Shasta McNasty.
We had Brittany, who is the bass player for Guilt by Association. Her brother was in the band, and they were metalcore-ish.
I don't remember what her band sounded like, but she was just fundamentally untalented, I mean, even among this crowd of chuds.
Yeah.
We had Chelsea, who was the new bass player for Final Drive. She was a guitarist who had been playing bass for, I believe, 4 weeks when they got picked for this show.
Wait, I had that backwards. Swap my commentary for those two people. That was sexist. I apologize.
We had Ahmad, who was in a metalcore band from upstate New York, Beyond All Reason.
Ahmad was my favorite.
Yeah, easily. Oh, God. Easily the best one.
Just because he was like the biggest punching bag that everyone hated.
Yeah.
And clearly bipolar on so many levels.
Yeah, we'll get into that too. There was Ryan from the nu metal band Cinder from North Carolina.
I fucking, out of everybody on the show, I fucking hated this guy the most.
Which one was Ryan?
The one who talks with a performative southern accent.
My bass player doesn't own a phone. I remember him now.
It was Adair from Mantis, who were metalcore band.
Menonitis. In California. It was misspelled like every other band.
Yeah. Yes, two ends. yeah, a lot of leather cuffs.
Yeah.
Tank tops and cutoffs and JNCO jeans that, like, I think this was at the point where they stopped selling JNCO jeans, so everybody wearing JNCO jeans had them, like, faded to a point where it's definitely, like, showing the years since they stopped selling them.
I saw a lot of Lee pipes, you know, if you couldn't afford the big bucks for JNCOs, you got those from Kmart.
Oh, the Lee pipes, yeah. I don't know. I don't think JNCOs were particularly expensive. I think the trip pants were what was really sweet, but most of us just went for, like, the black JNCOs at JCPenney because, you know, $20 on sale.
I don't know, man. I remember JNCOs being, like, 50 to 70 bones, whereas, like, you know, the off-brand shit, South Pole and what have you, was far cheaper.
Your mom probably just didn't take you to the good deals, man.
My mom wouldn't buy me that shit. I had to buy that shit myself.
Yeah. See, my mom's a mean couponer, so I was looking fresh.
And now we're adults and we could dress as ridiculously as we want.
We had one more character, right?
Yes, there was Mark from A Dozen Furies, very metalcore band, and something that maybe you guys don't know and other listeners might not know. Mark was in the band Unloco.
No way.
Who played on Ozfest in 2003.
So he was faking the funk. He was there performing the entire time?
Yes.
Wow.
He had already played the second stage of Ozfest.
So are we okay with giving spoilers here on this show?
Do you want to run through episode by episode? Or do you just want to talk at random about things that happen?
Let's just talk at random about things, because this was just that kind of a show where I didn't recognize substance if it was tried to be put there on purpose. So I don't think we should grant them as much in our show.
I would like to talk a little bit again about Six Deep, because that made the biggest impression on me on these early episodes, seeing them with your audition tape. I thought that they were going to choose the singer of that band to be the representative, because this guy was such a fucking scumbag. He was, like, talking about how it's his band and he's going to be famous while he has, like, a snake draped around him and is, like, putting on eyeliner.
I do remember that. Yeah, he had, like, a boa constrictor and he's just, like... smoking with the poor animal on him.
Yeah.
Can't be comfortable for that poor reptile.
Yeah, man. Don't smoke.
There was a scene where they were waiting for to hear that they were going to be on the show. And this guy, I think he was the guitarist. Kelly was the singer. And the guitarist is like, no, I'm calm at all. I don't really mind. Oh, fuck. Is that a bee? I'm going to freak out.
All of these guys looked exactly alike in that they had novelty haircuts and lion beards and extremely shitty tattoos that were only visible if they were shirtless, which they constantly were, and were like knocking back 40s. So the funniest thing to me in the series, and I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but I know I excitedly texted you at the time when I saw it, is that Kelly from this band is talking to a guy pretending to be a cop at one point on the show, where he lets out that he was an attorney, but he's doing this band thing instead, which is the most baffling thing to me.
Yeah, so he's speaking to this... they don't know it's a fake detective, because earlier in the show, Kelly and had Jesse, one of the other people on the show, pretend to be Clown from Slipknot. And they meet a couple of girls who say they're 18 and 19, and he has Jesse autograph their butts and boobs as Clown. And this detective then talks to all of the people on the show saying, like, these girls were underage. And I think he tells them at one point they got Clown tattooed on their bodies. And one of the girls is Jewish, and it's just this whole ridiculous scenario. How is this guy an attorney? Like, he has to be... whatever, something completely different to not know that you probably wouldn't get in trouble for this.
Well, I heard you guys say he was an attorney, and I was watching the show, and he said something about being an attorney for real estate, and I was like, oh, okay, makes sense. Okay. Guy doesn't know fucking shit. He's like, he got his, like, bar exam at an actual bar. You know what I mean? Like, there's just nothing there.
This is the motherfucker that was responsible for the entire real estate crash of 2008.
That kind of a douchebag. And he just, like, the best part is, as they were going through this absolutely ludicrous, like, non-legal, silly breakdown of what he could possibly be tried for, he was freaking out the most.
He was going to cry.
Yeah, he was extremely upset.
Out of all the dumb shit on the series, though, I think this was the most annoying to me, the procedure with the fake cop, because it just felt like such a put-on, like nobody could possibly believe any of this shit. But the guy seemed dumb enough that he might have, actually.
Not to mention that, like, all these girls' faces were, like, put on screen and not blurred out ever, so, like, even as someone who's only watched as much TV at the time, I was like, this is ludicrous, this is bullshit. And I guess, oh my god, like, I guess the cop was a real cop, like Officer Bob they called him, but he was just pretending to have something to get them in trouble for.
Yeah, because I mean,
Sharon and friends,
if there's one thing that the police really care about, it's prosecuting statutory rape from rock stars on the Ozfest tour. What year was Dope on?
What year was Dope on?
I don't think Dope was ever on Ozfest.
Oh, that's surprising to me.
Interesting factoid. Throughout the filming of this show, they have them do various themed hijinks, all related to the fact that they're going on tour with Ozfest 2004. And that's the only Ozfest that I was actually present at. Huh. Like, I actually went to 04 and I saw that whole lineup. And it was kind of cool to watch it all over again and see, like, oh yeah, that shitty band was there. Oh yeah, Hatebreed was there. Oh yeah, Slipknot was there.
How was Atreyu?
I don't know if I made it to Atreyu. I think Atreyu was very early on in the second stage.
Yeah, Ozfest used to do that with the rotating bands. Like, they would start at like 9:30 in the morning.
Right. I actually walked in, I remember, as I Lay Dying was playing, which should have been, like, you know, the time that As I Lay Dying could be on a stage was 2004, when it was acceptable to, like, be a fan for them. A little more questionable now. But I think I saw As I Lay Dying, and then it was, like, Lamb of God, and then Lacuna Coil all of a sudden, and then it was, like, Hatebreed and Slipknot.
It's funny, 15 years later, we've got bullshit with Hatebreed and As I Lay Dying still.
Right. Like I said, metal fans are just stuck in time, and nothing pinpoints that better than this show. I recommend people check it on YouTube. You guaranteed, if you're a metalhead, you have like 6 or 7 friends that are just like the chuds on this show.
Jordan, what was the tweet that you pulled up and I got a good chuckle out of earlier from Jamie Josta?
Oh, he's been going off on this band Churches.
Yeah.
Churches with a V.
Yeah, they're like a pop band, right? And yeah, they're fine. They're a fine
and
pop
they're,
band.
Deftones are having their big, like, festival or, like, one-day big show, which is, like, a weird trend now of bands doing this. They hit a certain point. Like, Slipknot kind of does the same thing with Knotfest. And anyway, Deftones is playing this, and Gojira is also playing, and Churches is playing. And Jamie Josta, in, you know, all of his genius moves, went out to Twitter complaining, who is this band Churches? How dare they play above Gojira, who is popular and has sold records and blah, blah, blah. And people took him to task and tore him a new one.
Incredible stuff. I thought I also saw him, like, saying that As I Lay Dying should have been billed higher on some other.
All That Remains.
Oh, fuck. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He was on a little bit of a tangent, said, and while we're talking about this, I saw the same thing happen with All That Remains, and they should have been higher because they've sold lots of records and, you know, put out more albums, something like that. And it's just, you know, that's not how it works. You play these festivals, too.
Yeah. Like, one of the members of Churches actually took him to task, like, on Twitter. And then, like, oh my god, he curled up like such a little bitch the moment, like, he found out that some human being that he was talking shit about could reach out to him on this completely public forum. He was just like, yo, now I feel bad. It's like, shut the fuck up. Don't say it in the first place, moron.
God, shut the fuck up, Jamie Josta in general. I enjoyed watching him rant a bit on this TV show. Just this stupid fucking line beard. He's like, it's about respect. Fuck you.
Was he talking or singing? I never know.
His actual voice is pretty light.
It's about respect.
Hatebreed is baffling to me in that this is still a word that we're saying in this, the year of our Lord 2019.
The logo for Hatebreed looks like the underside of a skateboard from 2002.
It's like the Thrasher logo, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that they've managed to literally not change for 20 plus years of their existence. I mean, they're the AC/DC of hardcore.
That's every time that they appear on a festival bill that I think about going to, I think the words in my head, now is the time for me to arise and go get a beer.
Born to bleed, fighting to succeed. I saw them once years ago, like mid-2000s. I never need to see them again.
No. Like ever. I said, I saw them on that show, and, you know, That's all I need. That was enough. I'm full on Hatebreed, guys. Thank you.
I think it was in the third episode of the show. It has one of my favorite graphic errors of all time of any TV show. They're going through the lineup, and it's like, playing the second stage, Every Time I Die, Atreyu, God Forbid, and Throwdown played on this tour, but it doesn't say Throwdown. It says Throw Clown.
There were actually like multiple typos on the graphic front. I don't know what kind of moron they hired to do it.
Yeah, like Every Time I Die was Every Time I Die.
Yeah, and there was something like the name of one of their acoustic ballads was something Heart, and it was like He Art or something. No, like He Rart or something. Oh, it was bad.
I feel like we got to go through some of the challenges here. And since you brought up the acoustic one, I want to talk about it a bit because that was incredibly painful to sit through.
I was so entertained by that. Come on.
I really liked Rob Halford's style.
Halford was brought in to judge the competition, which they asked all the contestants. They were allowed to fly down one bandmate to help them write a 2 minute or less acoustic song to perform in front of Rob Halford. And Rob Halford, bless his heart, he shows up wearing a fucking the Kangol bucket hat?
Bucket hat, yeah. Like a big black bucket hat. I think it had a skull on it.
Oh, yeah. Just looking like a fucking rain poncho. It was fantastic.
Looking like he was in New Radicals, if you remember that.
Panama Jack Rob Halford. It was something to behold. Yeah. Because when I think like just totally off key acoustic, I think Rob Halford of Judas Priest.
Halford's the man. We got to get him on the line for this one.
Yeah.
He must have owed Ozzy and Sharon a favor.
Yeah. I think that they said it elsewhere on the show, but that was the first time that Halford was playing with Priest in quite a while, I believe. So, maybe.
Yeah, I think I remember that. I think in 04, because they also played, and it was insane. It blew my 15-year-old mind, but it was like, I think Judas Priest hadn't performed with Rob Halford up until that point. They had our very good buddy there, Tim Ripper Owens, for a while.
Well, this is also after Halford had Fight, and 2 was one of his bands. And I think he had just had Halford at one point.
Yes, Halford was cool too. But Fight is really something. I think he wore like the bucket hat for Fight shows to show that he was cool and tough.
That's how you do it. If you want to show that you're cool and tough, you wear a bucket hat. That's a style rule.
The mid to late 90s just melted the brains of like popular 80s metal bands.
It really did. Let's talk about some of these ballads, please.
I don't remember any of them. They were all very bad.
It was all supposed to be about like the road and being on the road.
I want you to write an acoustic ballad about being on the road. And it's like, I can't imagine a more trite assignment, and I can't imagine how these people fucked it up so bad. Like, this is a gimme. And yet
I don't know. I think they performed as well as one could expect, given 24 hours and a very stupid bandmate to help them.
They had to do it in like a creepy motel also.
Right.
It didn't help.
Any one of you fellas, anybody listening to this show, you, if somebody gives you 24 hours to write an acoustic ballad, I believe in you. I believe you can do this because it's really fucking easy to do. And yet you had guys like Ahmad who were trying to still play metalcore on his acoustic guitar.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, it's a very different instrument than electric guitar, down-tuned and plugged into a metal zone, I'm sure.
All I could think about was the Tenacious D song. The road is fucking hard. The road is fucking tough. I wish someone busted that out.
That's probably what I would have done if I were stuck in this position. I would have wrote the song right there on the spot and seen what Halford thought.
Just the look on his face.
I'm on the road again, away from the people I know and love, and Rob Halford's here.
I mean, that's a better melody than what came out of any of these people. what killed me was the lady that had only been playing bass for 6 weeks. What she came up with was baffling to me from any kind of song structure perspective, because the verse was all like one note vocally. Like it was, and it's just like, oh my god, you need to shift your pitch here one way or the other. That's what you do.
And Rob was very kind.
He was.
Just incredibly kind. Just so nice for no reason. He couldn't be asked to be kind of mean to these very, very terrible musicians. But I don't know. It was it was a lot. Just the whole show was a lot. The little challenges were really silly. A lot of them didn't make any sense. No. And I don't know.
Can we talk a bit about, I guess, the challenge master, Big Dave?
Do we have to?
We do, because I have things I'd like to say.
All right, Big Dave, we're talking about, this is the Black Label Society wearing vest guy.
Ozzy's tour manager. I looked him up on IMDb. He is currently a producer for what appears to be Italian porno movies.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him.
He shaved off his stupid facial hair, so now he looks all slicked back and stuff. But at the time of this filming, he was wearing the Black Label Society cut and basically looking like a big Irish stereotype.
One of the better parts of it is when, to kind of introduce you guys to Ahmad. Ahmad is like, God, what was he, like 20? He was really young. And he had the same like pencil line beard like everybody else. But for some reason, this kid was just like an extreme spaz. He acted like you gave a 6-year-old too many Skittles or something. Like he would just all of a sudden do something ludicrous and obnoxious at any given moment. And everybody hated him throughout the duration of the show. But he stole this guy's vest at one point and wore it for a second. And one of the better parts of the show is when, like, Zakk Wylde came out and threatened to beat the fucking shit out of him for, like, 2 minutes.
Zakk Wylde wearing his goddamn Sons of Anarchy fucking leather vest and his U.S. military hat.
Yeah.
Lecturing this kid about respecting other men. Shut the fuck up, Zakk Wylde. Go make a squeedly squee on your guitar, you fucking loser.
Wow, 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 wow. Oh, you better fucking shut the fuck up, man. I'll fucking beat the fucking shit out of your fucking ass. And he doesn't realize, like, most of everything he said is just bleeped out for MTV.
Well, nobody did, because I had this thing blasting on my TV soundbar, and half of the series is unlistenable because it's some dummy motherfucker who keeps saying the fuck word. And so it's beep, beep, beep the entire time, man.
I wonder what our podcast would sound like if we censored it.
Let's start doing it right now. I don't want to go through and listen to every instance of the fuck word and press a little bloop button, so will one of you guys do it?
No.
Okay. Fuck no.
It's not fucking happening. Fucking no way, fuck man. You're fuck man now instead of Joe, by the way.
Fuck man. So Big Dave continually, I guess, tricks these contestants into doing something and then punishes them for it. He's basically just like hazing these children the entire time. So like the first thing was he's like, hey, let's go see Ozzy perform on the main stage. I'm like, yeah, all right. And in the middle of it, like, leaves and then takes the bus and makes them take a van together and then do everyone's laundry. And I didn't understand any of this, but I think he was making some kind of point about life on the road's different, brother.
And Ozzy was mumbling about, I really like the Ozzy pranks. You know, I like that Ozzy just, his pranks involve, like, food and things that are stinky, usually stinky food. Like, he'll hide fish in people's beds and stuff.
Well, he also took a shit on their bus and then left it there, which was kind of funny to me, actually.
We got to talk about the bat prank.
Again, this is one of these things that feels so over the top that, like, I don't know how you wouldn't see it was a put-on.
Yeah, like, they blindfold you and... Anyway, so I think to punish everybody for what Ahmad did, they said that they had to go on stage and bite the head off a live bat. And they showed them like a cage of live bats and everything else. And what they ended up doing is they had, what was it, like a kiwi? Like a fuzzy kiwi on a hot dog. And that was the bat head they stuck through a little glory hole. It made them like bite off on stage with a blindfold. And that was it. So, and everybody was like freaking out and believed it because they had the whole doctor bit where they had to get like rabies shots before the incident.
Yeah. And a couple of people were like, I'm a huge animal rights advocate. Like, this is fucked up. And it's like, so don't do it.
Yeah, and then they just did it because, you know, they want to open out a show too early in the day for anyone to see them.
Yeah, my question is, like, for the audience that's there to see, I don't know, fucking, let's say, Unearth. Like, Unearth is your favorite new band, you're stoked to see these guys and to punch somebody in the head while you're watching them. Instead, it's like, okay, we're going to have 45 minutes of cameras come out so that these dipshits that you've never heard of in your life can pretend to bite a bat's head. It's like, woo! Can't wait.
Cool. Yeah. I don't know. Sounds fun. It'd be a good show. We need more antics, man, in like, the small-time metal shows. Like,
it's just band set up and the PA plays songs you already know way too loud while everyone looks at their phone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. I don't mind that. That's fine with me.
That's a good Friday night right there.
I mean, I'm just saying, if something's broke, you don't have to fix it. Not broke, you don't... Whatever. Anyway, so yeah, the thing with this show is that occasionally everybody meets up in front of Sharon Osbourne, and she decides who leaves the show. I think on the first or second episode, they did a straw poll of the contestants to see who they would... want to leave the show. They all said Ahmad. Every one of them said Ahmad. She reads that out loud and she's like, I'm in charge of who stays and goes. Ahmad, you're staying.
Because it's great TV.
Yeah. Just what a perfect little wiener to have on your program.
That's why they had him, you know. I'm sure in their interview process, someone went, this guy is fucking annoying. We have to have him on a bus with seven other people annoying them at all.
Oh, yeah. That's how it goes, man. You have like, I mean, you can pretend that it's maybe about the music, but of course not. One look at like a guy like fucking Kelly and you're like, I got to get this moron on TV.
Yeah, it all follows a formula, you know, like you have to have your annoying little wiener. You have to have your massive skis. You have to have, I don't know, everybody else was kind of like fucking wallpaper, like especially the guy from God, I can't remember, Cinder, Cynder, I think was how it was spelled.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Fucking North Carolina trash, like offered absolutely nothing to the program. Whenever he opened his mouth, I was like, please talk normal.
We can't get through this whole show without talking about how you had this Kelly guy and this was the chin strap lawyer with the spiky hair, just like grinding the front of his JNCO shorts on every underage girl that he came across.
Yeah. And then there was that scene when they're doing laundry and he gets this lady doing her laundry to show her him his tits.
Yeah, she was showing the camera crew, not fucking him.
Yeah.
But it's like, hey, I mean, if you got the advantage, you might as well play your card.
Reality television is terrible, man.
Like, it's awful. It's like, why is VH1 still on the air?
Was this VH1 or was this MTV?
This was MTV2. Not even MTV. Like, they wouldn't even show this on the real channel.
So, I think probably the most interesting segment for me was that these contestants, they were set to learn one song from a band on the second stage and then perform it with them. And I thought that was actually a pretty cool bit. What did you guys think about that?
I think that should happen more.
I liked it because you had a couple like the band Throwdown, a band that I haven't really thought about since hearing their Baby Got Back cover in, like, I don't know, 2002.
Oh yeah.
They were explaining to the guitarist, he's like, man, you can play every one of these songs with one hand, so feel free to use your other hand to do something like throw some horns.
The song they were playing is called Unite, and the lyrics are just unite, unite, unite the masses. And it is like Baby's first hardcore song.
Throwdown was the most banal hardcore band of all of them.
Yeah. I think Throwdown laid the groundwork for all the bands that were like that during that time period. Just open strings.
Yep. So
and fighting.
Yeah, lots of fighting. They were from like Orange County, right?
I don't know. What? Yes. Let's go with yes.
I don't want to do Throwdown dirty. Throwdown band.
Googling Throwdown.
Orange County, California. There we go.
Wow. Figures. Nailed it.
Yeah. You can tell because they are rich kids that are mean.
Like most hardcore bands.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, they had whichever fella play one string while he was dancing around
high school.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you had Unearth with the metalcore guy, or no, the new metal guy, and he did okay. And then was it Every Time I Die? Every time
was I think it was
Every Time I Die had the bass player that didn't know how to play bass. And that was incredible.
No, it was Bleeding Through.
It was
Bleeding Through had Chelsea, and they were trying to teach her their song. And she's just like, yeah, I don't even know what root notes are.
Yeah, he's like playing this bit for her, which, to be fair, it doesn't look like a super simple bit. And she's like, slow down, like writing on a piece of notebook paper, 5, 7, 11. did not exactly nail that one.
Been there, done that, though. I know what it's like to be the bass player that can't bass.
Same, but still. You think?
I mean, in that situation, you just make it look like you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Or like turn around so no one can see you until you like get your bearings.
That's the pro move. Turn around. That way you added an air of mystery.
And don't listen to anybody tell you that, like, if you play bass wrong, it doesn't matter because nobody can hear it. Because specifically in live metal, it's just about the only thing everybody can hear in those fucking bands and those terrible PAs and those terrible sound guys. It's just bass all the way up all the time.
Yeah.
So good luck out there, kiddos.
Your bass isn't a real instrument. You'll be fine. So, yeah, that was a fun one. Were there any other challenges you particularly enjoyed?
The Dimmu Borgir promotion episode.
Jesus fucking Christ, I forgot about that, yeah. Tell us a little bit about Dimmu Borgir.
This was probably the first time Dimmu Borgir was ever on American TV, let alone MTV, and Progenies of the Great Apocalypse was actually the theme song for the show.
Yeah, the thing that sounds like the Batman theme.
Yeah, it's the one good Dimmu Borgir song, and it was the opening of the show. And 15 years ago.
And they've never done anything since.
Right.
And so the contest had to be, the people had to do promotion for Dimmu Borgir. They had to call up radio stations saying, can we get the band on your show? And at first they accidentally called like a Christian rock station, which is just delightful to think about. And they eventually do get on a radio show, and this was after Dimmu Borgir's manager asked them, does anyone know Dimmu Borgir? And they're like, yeah. And she's like, does anyone know any of their song titles? And they couldn't answer it. Love so it. They get on this radio show, and they just managed to get the jerkiest shock jock DJ talking to Dimmu Borgir, asking them the stupidest questions. And Dimmu Borgir was not having it and was cursing on air, and they got kicked off the show.
I appreciated that they kept focusing on the big red Stop Bush sticker on the radio guy's headpiece. It was like, hey, look at this asshole, right? I don't know, man. Like, was this even like a real radio station?
Well, they were in like, what, Cleveland? Yeah. So it's probably a real Cleveland radio station. Yeah. I mean,
that guy's probably still in there.
Cleveland. Yeah, he's probably like the only guy who DJs that entire, like all of the segments on all of the radio stations there.
Now that you mention, I'm remembering that episode opened with like shots of scenery around Cleveland.
And they're like, we're in Cleveland, it's a big deal. And it's just like, it's Cleveland, it's not a big deal. Are you kidding?
Did you ever see the hastily made Cleveland tourist video?
Yes. At least we're not Detroit.
Yeah, it was pretty much that. I like the close-up on Indian Stadium. Like,
oh, yeah,
Jacobs
yeah.
Field.
They're going to win the pennant this year.
Our main export is crippling depression. Under construction since 1868.
I'm impressed you can remember all these lyrics.
Yeah. Michael Moore featured it in one of his movies.
Oh, shit, he did, yeah.
Yeah. There are two videos, and I think he might have spliced them.
That's true.
Mm. On this episode, they also have Big Dave gives Ahmad a haircut.
Oh, no.
And he gives him the bozo. So it's shaved down in the middle, and the sides are just like gelled out and pointy.
Yeah, at some point they painted him like a clown, too, which I didn't fully understand. Just, I guess, to pick on this guy that everybody hates.
Yeah. Right, just to, like, you know, haze this mentally ill young man every which way they could. But yeah, the first guy he kicked off, Jesse, man, he was short lived. And it was great when he was like trying to pass his demo out to all of the active bands that were playing at Ozfest, and that was like the main reason he got kicked off.
Giving his demo tape to the guy from Unearth, that was good.
Oh, that was legit. One of the greatest moves was when Sharon kicked him off. This was like right after the whole bat biting thing, and she was going on about like, you told everybody that you were an animal rights activist. Why don't you come here and pick up G-G-G-G-G or whatever her fucking dog's name is? And so he goes over, and the dog goes, I'm gonna get him! And bites at him. And then she's like, dogs have a keen sense of these things. They know that you don't like animals. And it's like, you knew that fucking shitty little yippy piece of shit would have done that to anybody on Earth. And he tried to make a point about it. Yeah, it was totally like, why you got to set this guy up worse, man? Just kick him off the show. Don't give him rabies from your fucky little dog.
I was curious. I had to Google what Ahmed's up to right now. You'll never guess this, man.
He's alive.
Well, yeah, he is alive.
that's the biggest nice. Kicker.
So his biggest claim to fame now, aside from the Battle for Ozfest, is that he spent a year in Crazy Town.
No shit.
Yeah,
for him.
And I'm looking.
What up, year?
I'm looking at his Facebook profile right now. I'm sending him a friend request.
Get him on the show. Get him on the show.
His most recent post is, it says, and I'm going to go ahead and quote him here. Is it true the saying, long legs, long snatch? I don't know. Someone said it a while ago and it stuck with me in my head. I have to ask because I don't understand it completely. Like, if you're super tall, then you have a long vagina. How come I pee next to tall guys and they have small dicks? Shit is getting weird. Might delete later. LMFAO.
This guy... 20 when the show recorded, 15 years later. This is a 35-year-old man writing this. Don't ever change, Ahmed. We love you, man.
It looks like he's got another band called Conquering Atlantis that has an incredibly metalcore logo. So
Jesus Christ. Conquering Atlantis?
With a staggering 306 likes on Facebook right now. So
how cursive is the logo?
It's... It looks steampunky.
Is there a trident anywhere in the logo?
There's not. Huge missed opportunity.
Come on.
Fuck you guys.
They were right to bully him.
With the audition tape for all of these bands, they were like, yeah, man, I quit my job. I'm putting everything into this band. We're going to make it. We're all going to make it. This is essentially what every single contestant said. It looks to me like the only person that somewhat made it was the guy that won the entire competition. And can we go ahead and reveal it now?
Yes. Well, you should say that they actually had the last three bands actually perform the song on the main stage at Ozfest.
That's true.
You had a Dozen Furies, Mantis, and Cinder all perform one song. I remember watching this when it first came out, and the thought I had while having Cinder play is they had a DJ, like turntables, that whole deal. Why didn't they have that guy on the competition? Can you imagine him trying to do an acoustic song for Rob Halford when all he can do is spin on a turntable?
That'd be so fucking good. I remember I was watching and listening really intently, and I could not hear anything the DJ was doing.
It was like background ear candy type stuff.
Cinder, yeah, the South Carolina guy with the terrible accent, with the Godsmack sounding band, somehow had a DJ. It was fuck awful, man.
And so in this finale episode, it's A Dozen Furies, Mantis, Cinder, and A Dozen Furies and Cinder go on to the finals. Mantis somehow doesn't make it to the finals, and Cinder does. The happy ending with that is Mantis actually was signed to Century Media not too long after the show and put out an album, so good for them.
Yeah, I was reading their Wikipedia entry, and it said, I believe the entry was written in 2012, and it's like, as of this writing, their 2008 follow-up has been shelved, but it will come out soon.
Yeah, those are always the saddest ones, which is like, as of 2008, the band plans to reform. It's like, oh, jeez. It's like looking at Battle Archives and you see a solo project and it's listed as split up. It's like, how does that happen?
Yeah. We're not doing so good, me and me.
And so the winner was at least partially set up for like online voting, which can you imagine if that happened now? And the winner was A Dozen Furies, and they played on the 2005 Second Stage Ozfest, the one Ozfest I went to.
A Dozen Furies would occasionally be played on rock radio in Dallas, so I guess this gave them the extra credibility they needed to get with Kramer and Switch, or whoever the fucking shock jock was at the time. But it is funny to note that apparently, behind the scenes, not revealed the entire time, that the guy from this band was playing on Ozfest as it was. With Unloco, I feel like I've been lied to. I feel like reality television is all constructed.
Come on, man. No, it's not. Don't say that.
So, it goes back to what Jordan says all the time. If you know somebody, you can get ahead. If you don't know somebody, you're fucked.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the fact that Mantis got signed to Century Media. And that's the thing. Like, as long as you get on TV, record labels will scoop you right up. It doesn't matter if you win or lose or whatever you did on television. Like, you're already, like, way ahead of the game in most respects.
Or you're like Cinder and you have to change your name because there's already another new metal band named Cinder who are, I think, signed to, like, Geffen Records.
Oh, oopsie.
Another Cinder with the same stupid new metal misspelling of it.
C-I-N-D-E-R.
I will consistently remind people as often as I can that I think Franz, the guy from Attila, he got his start by being a guest on MTV Made.
Where yep, he was an ugly teenager and they put him in a nice shirt and washed his hair.
That's it. Yeah, he wanted to be a male model and he did a very bad job at it. But because his band was briefly mentioned somewhere on this MTV show, they've been huge ever since in respects to metal music, I guess.
Thanks, MTV.
Yeah, way to go, MTV. We really appreciate him.
I feel like we're due for another one of these. I feel like they ought to get Ahmed to take the role of Big Dave in this, because Big Dave is off shooting pornos or something.
Well, they should do like an Ahmed of Love on VH1 where a bunch of women try to like hook up with Ahmed.
Sorry, it looks like he's married according to his Facebook.
Who cares?
Page. Hey, you can't conquer Atlantis unless you have a harem.
That's right.
It's true. I posted on Twitter that I was watching this stupid thing, Megan from Couch Slut said that she got a call back to do, I think it was Flavor of Love. Did you ever watch that one?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Rock of Love was my favorite, just because I couldn't get enough of the different ways that Bret Michaels would try to hide that he's bald.
Yeah, that was the best one. But, oh my God, watching this, like, greasy, disgusting Flavor Flav, like, make out with these young ladies was just, oh, it was horrible. And that spun off so many spinoffs, like... Everybody Loves New York. Yeah. And some guy, some Italian creep that was on Everybody Loves New York, he got his own show, and it just kept going. It's just Inception with stupid reality TV.
See, like in another world, though, you would have Megan doing these shows instead. I think we missed out on that.
I think Megan should do some VH1, like just be the host of it, just make people do whatever she wants.
Yeah, I'd watch that. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Like Washer Dog or something. I don't know. Just like really like ordinary stuff that anybody has to deal with.
What's was there anything else about these episodes that stuck out to you?
It was kind of neat to hear bands, like they just had background music from that time. Again, being on an MTV show.
Yeah.
Hearing In Flames, hearing Dimmu Borgir, hearing Soilwork, all these bands that really never got any play except for like Headbangers Ball at midnight. So that was nice as a young metalhead, someone that was like still excited about music at the time, to be able to see it every week.
Do you guys remember Lacuna Coil?
Yeah. They were in John Wick 2.
They just put out a new song like this week.
Oh. Did they?
Yeah. They're still on Century Media.
See, wow. How does that happen?
Because they have their little mall gothy, regular rocky gothy sound, and there's an audience for that.
Set me free with your love.
I don't want to talk out of turns here, but I seem to recall that one member of the band is named Pizza. That's not me being racist against Italians like normal. I think that's his name.
Pizza.
Let me look that up.
Yeah, right.
Ooh, cue the is Joe being racist to Italians or not music.
Okay, this is going to take 40 minutes because they've had a lot of members. this is just grinding an organ for a monkey,
just
right?
The Godfather theme.
Okay, I was being racist. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure there's a kind of Lacuna Coil named Chicken
Pong. No, fuck you. From 1998 to 2014, on rhythm guitar was Cristiano Pizza McGlory.
So is Pizza his nickname?
Yes, it's his nickname.
Ridiculous.
Okay, so on the scoreboard, not racist.
well... Okay, let me get
with
my
the hand
out.
Motion kind of going back and forth a little, like...
Like, I look and I see all the crossed fives over on the racist portion, and then I go up and I just give you one tick on the not racist portion.
Hey, that's called self-improvement, baby.
And then all the minorities line up and clap as you walk out your door.
I am a true ally now.
Name
when
was
were
actually
you radicalized,
Pizza,
yeah.
Identity politics.
All right, this is we're off subject. This is not about me. This is about the battle for Ozfest. Is Ozfest still going? I know that there was a revitalization a while back.
They just do the Ozfest meets Knotfest. It's like it's not a tour anymore. They occasionally do like one-off festival shows for like a day or two, and I think they occasionally do stuff in Europe, like it's a tour sort of a little bit, same thing, but it hasn't been full-blown tour since late 2000s. They did a free one and that was kind of it.
Yeah, I wonder if the American festival circuits in regards to metal just like is not lucrative anymore. I mean, Warped Tour.
I think it's so expensive to rent out these venues and to have all these buses and deal with all these people and ticket prices and dealing with like Ticketmaster and all that stuff. So I think it's kind of the same thing with like Warped Tour. Well, they do it. People will go, but it's expensive.
But for this kind of shit, it's all for the same fucking 10 bands of middle-aged rock stars that have been doing the same fucking tour every year since the 90s. Like the 2018 Ozfest, I just pulled it up. The event was hosted by Ozzy Osbourne, Marilyn Manson, Rob Zombie, Korn, and Zakk Wylde's Black Sabbath tribute band, Zakk Sabbath. Fuck you.
God, listen to new music. It's just stop. But
I will say, if new music you want on there, is it going to draw the same as having a Rob Zombie and a Marilyn Manson and a Slayer? The best you could do is have like a Five Finger Death Punch on there or Avenged Sevenfold, which is the same music, just physically different people.
I think the best thing that could happen here is that all 10 of these bands get the fuck off the stage literally forever. All of them, like all retire. You're all multimillionaires. Stop it. Like make some room and then maybe the newer bands, like call it Ozfest, but have bands that matter in 2019 play it.
It's the second stage.
I think it's kind of like the problem that the tobacco industry was facing for a while. It's like all of your biggest fans, they're dying. Instead of from emphysema, it's from cirrhosis. Like you kept seeing the crowd reaction shots of the Battle for Ozfest, and they would always point to some shirtless middle-aged guy in a cowboy hat banging his head because the drunk middle-aged man is the most enthusiastic person for all of these things. That guy's dying.
But even Big Tobacco figured it out. Like now, I mean, we almost took nicotine completely off the market in our generation, but they figured out a way to put it in a USB stick and make it cherry flavored. So now it's back, baby.
So we need cherry flavored metal bands.
That's right.
Fucked up, man.
It's gotta fucked come up. On back. Yeah.
You gotta try some of this cotton candy robot dick.
It's like I can get away with smoking pot in a preschool now. You know, it didn't used to be the case 10 some odd years ago when I did smoke pot in a preschool. Bummer, man.
Why?
I don't know, because I wanted to. It didn't happen, but yeah, I'm just trying to make a point.
All right. Well, we've talked an awful lot here about a totally forgotten 15-year-old reality television program. Is there anything that we want to put a bow on with this?
One funny thing was in the very first episode when they had all the other bands coming in and they all look ridiculous. There was one called Tesseract.
That's I was going to mention that and I forgot.
Jesus Christ, I missed that.
It wasn't the actual one that we know now, but
no.
I found that very funny.
Yeah, it was like a bunch of like pudgy Latino dudes and I was like, what the fuck? Isn't Tesseract, I think they're from England.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know. Okay, so everybody, if you want to watch this, it's on YouTube. It was uploaded 10 years ago. So yell at that guy for missing that one episode.
Yeah, and the quality, you know, you might not want to put it on your big screen. Don't cast this one. Just check it on your phone.
I watch shit on my big TV. It was
fun. Yeah, what's wrong with you? Come on.
What?
All right, everybody. I got to get moving. Thank you so much for joining us for this very special episode.
Yeah, keep it metal, bros, but not like that.
Yeah, we'll see you next week when we get rid of these JNCOs and big leather cuffs.
All right, tipping my bucket hat to y'all. Have a good one, boys.
Bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.